What's up, everybody? My name is Eric, and you're listening to the SideQuesting Podcast. I have one announcement before we get started today. Our podcast is now available on a ton of different major platforms all over the internet, such as Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, just to name a few. If you happen upon our humble podcast in your internet wanderings, it would mean a lot if you could leave us a like, rating, or review. It really helps us out, it helps other people find us, and it helps us connect more with our audience. If you'd like to keep up with everything going on here at the SideQuesting Podcast, you can follow us on Twitter at PodSideQuesting. You can also follow me on Twitter at Riptide104 and my co-host Tom at RedRival26. You can even email us at SideQuestingPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for all the support and enjoy the show. I'm just going to start talking. That's fine with okay. You.
Talk.
Tom, how's it going, man? Good to talk to you.
It's going. Apocalypse 2020 has bypassed us.
Now
we are on to Aftermath 2021. We'll see how that goes.
I was going to say, we're in the new year. Very exciting. Happy New Year to everybody.
Welcome everyone to Fallout 2021.
It feels like we left a lot of bad things back. Even though it's like 2 days difference, it feels like we left a lot of bad things back in 2020. So,
it takes is a change in mindset, and a lot of things will change.
True. I'm looking forward to my new diet that I'm starting. It'll last approximately 1 week until my next influx of cheap holiday candy. You know how that goes.
I work in retail. I understand cheap candy.
My mom made us, like, we went over to my mom's house for Christmas really quick, just to exchange gifts, and she sent each of us home with like a goodie bag of stuff she had made that had cookies and like four tubs of fudge. So my goal was, I'm like, all right, nothing counts during the holidays. So between the 2 weeks between the end of December and January, I just eat everything, right? Because it doesn't count. Mm-hmm. And that's not been good. Good result for
me.
So.
Listen, New Year's was the first day I have had an alcoholic drink in almost 4 years.
Wow, really?
Let's just say I still know how to make drinks to the point where I enjoy them too much. To the point where I have a giant bottle of Captain in the fridge, and for the 2 days that I've had drinks, and I've only had 6 drinks in total, I am almost done with it.
You're only supposed to put a little bit of alcohol in the drinks, Tom. It's supposed to be a 90-10 ratio.
I like to get to things quick. I like to start things fast.
You know, I found that too in my as I'm getting older here. I'm gonna turn 30 this year. In my younger days in college, I used to like drinking a lot of beers and stuff, you know, like that. But I find I'm the same way. I like to make a stiffer mixed drink now and have like one or two drinks and just get feeling really good, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just a better feeling.
Give me something that tastes good over something that's gonna like last a while.
Right. Well, I mean, but in college, that what you had to do was you had to get the most bang for your buck.
Yeah, I'll say the most cost efficient way.
So when you can get an 18 pack of Keystone for $18, it's a really, you know,
light
a dollar
beer. It is.
Yeah. It's, you're like, I'm gonna regret this for the rest of my life. But you know,
everyone judges the college kids for their light beer addiction. No, it's what they can afford.
Right. We're taught smart financial planning. So if that's not smart financial planning, I don't know what is at that point.
We weren't taught it in school, so we just have to learn as we go.
Right. I could buy one bottle of liquor for $20, or I could get 18 cans of beer for less than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the Side Drunk Podcast now.
Yes. Welcome to the New Year's Hangover Podcast.
We're not doing video games anymore. We're just doing alcohol explicitly. So... like I said, Happy New Year to everybody. Happy New Year to you, Tom. You
yes,
and Kilowatt and Little Red. I hope things are going well for you guys so far this year.
Yes.
3 days in, nothing bad has happened so far.
No, on the opposite side, actually.
Oh, really?
Little Red has been playing Kingdom Hearts 1.
You are herself. You're winning Father of the Year. Just saying.
And just to let you know, the boss that at the age of 13 gave me trouble, the original Shadow, Sora Shadow. is she beat it in the matter of like 2 minutes.
Whoa, is that the one in Hook's cabin when you're on Captain Hook's ship? That one?
The big, like, no. Basically, the embodiment of Sora's shadow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that thing.
For sure.
So she was just like, okay, I'll do it. And 2 minutes later, she's like, I did it. I win.
And you're like, listen.
Listen,
no,
very long.
It's supposed to take you longer than this. You have to go through the same thing I did.
You kids nowadays are born with game sharks in your head. Dad, what's a game shark? Shut up.
Right. You wouldn't understand. I'm not old. Leave me alone. Go back to make a half alcohol drink now.
As I whittle some wood. It's
totally fine. Totally fine. Well, I hope your guys' holidays went well.
Yeah, same New Year's.
We kept it pretty low key. We went over to all me, my siblings, and my new fiance and her, my sister's husband, got together for a little bit, and then we came back to my house and we made my sister and my fiance went to Costco and pretty much got like finger foods, like appetizers. Mm-hmm. And so my brother-in-law are just like, what are you guys doing? And they're just making mini tacos, mozzarella sticks, like pretzel bites. And I'm like, this is Christmas the way the Lord intended.
That's the way it's supposed to be. I don't want something big. Like, don't make a turkey. Don't make a ham. Don't make all this shit. Just give me something that I'm going to eat immediately that doesn't take 4 hours to make.
Throw finger foods into the microwave for, you know, 5 minutes and I'm good to go.
I can't complain, though, because Kilowatt's mother made stuffed shells.
Ooh. Oh, so that it was so good.
It was an Italian Christmas dinner, and it was like, oof.
Oof. That's the best. I can't be mad at that. That's the best. So, all right. Any good games or anything you picked up over the holiday season or anything you kind of did over the last 2 weeks, playing good games?
I have reignited my addiction to Final Fantasy games.
Seems to happen every couple of months.
I mean, when Steam has a sale and they have every Final Fantasy game for like $5-6, I mean, you kind of have to.
Yeah, the Steam winter sale was, it always comes at the worst time of the year. It's like, hey, you just got all this money, Steam winter sale. We just bought all those Christmas gifts.
Look, your taxes are coming in. Oh, time for a spring sale.
They know how to do it, really.
Yep, they do.
So which Final Fantasy, did you just buy all of them, or was there a specific one that you picked up?
I have all of them now.
Oh, nice. That's the way to do it.
Except the only ones I don't have are 13-2 and Lightning Returns, because I felt it was necessary to just bypass for now.
We don't need to talk about those.
No.
Really?
So I'm currently in the middle of playing 4.
Very nice. We don't need to worry about the woman goes on rampage to kill God section of the Final Fantasy 13.
I mean, if you think about it, that's a lot of Final Fantasy.
It's pretty much everyone.
You want to kill God? Sure. Play Final Fantasy.
Ragtag group of teenagers and young adults rises up.
You need teenagers with attitude.
Right. To overthrow an empire and kill God. They even did it at the end of 9 that you didn't really expect. Yep. It. They were like, oh, you killed Kuja, and it's like, oh, by the way, here's God. You're like, oh, cool.
Hey, listen, Final Fantasy 8, everyone's like, oh, it's a sorceress. Nope, wrong, it's a demigod.
a wild god has appeared.
A wild god has appeared and turns you into a monster, and you have to fight yourself.
Jesus. This has done more for me than any therapy session ever could, if I'm being honest. I got suckered into the Steam and the Nintendo eShop sale, definitely. Mm-hmm. I picked up Destiny 2 Beyond Light, just because it always seems to happen to me. I was a long time Destiny 1 player, and Destiny 2 came out, I kind of fizzled out of playing it, but then every expansion comes out and it's just kind of like, oh, I'm gonna pick this up, and then after I finish that expansion I say, okay, I'm not gonna get the next one, and then the next one comes out and I'm gonna pick this up, and it's just kind of a destructive cycle I found myself in.
It feels like, here's my problem with it. I do like playing the game because it's a good way to get people together and play that style of game, other than picking up better game like Borderlands.
True.
It just feels like as soon as you finish the campaign or whatever the new big thing is for Destiny 2, everyone just kind of disappears off of it.
Mm-hmm.
It disappears off the face of the earth. Like, the game never existed. And I'm like, what was the point of me playing this if everyone just disappears from it to begin with?
Right, and my biggest thing about that is I don't have a large group of friends that have access to the game. So all the end content stuff I want to do, like the raids and stuff, I don't really get an opportunity to do that much because when I was younger and I played D1, I used to do the whole, you know, find random people online to play with. But after just getting yelled at and so many bad people, I was just like, I'm not doing this. It's not worth
yeah,
it.
I can see that.
And then I finally picked up Fire Emblem Three Houses on the Switch.
Me too.
Which is, so you got it over the holiday?
Well, the problem is I ordered it on Black Friday, actually.
Oh.
Something happened.
Something happened.
I'm not going to say where exactly in New York State I live, but I'll just say that the package went from Texas because the only way I could get the deal for the game for $20 was to order it online, which apparently the closest place they could find was Texas.
Huh.
Even though I'm pretty sure my GameStop has the game.
I'm trying to think. There's several thousand miles between you and Texas. So.
Just a few thousand. it went to Syracuse, New York. Everyone knows where Syracuse is, because if you say you're from New York, oh, you're from Syracuse, or you're from New York City. Yeah, no.
Not Buffalo?
I'm 5 hours away from Syracuse.
Go Orange.
Yeah. It went from Syracuse, and instead of staying in New York, it went to Ohio.
That's not even the right way.
Disappeared for 5 days. Came back to Syracuse, which apparently UPS gave up and gave to the Postal Service. Waited another week and a half. And it finally showed up a couple days before Christmas.
But that doesn't make any sense. Like,
no, it doesn't.
At all. Did you order through Amazon?
No, I ordered actually through GameStop itself.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because Amazon, in my time working for them, they do crazy stuff like that too, where if you order something, they don't even ship it from the warehouse that's closest to where you where you are. Because I have a big old warehouse that's maybe like 15 minutes away from me, so you just assume, oh, they just ship it from there. But nope, package shows up from like middle of Alabama warehouse, and I say, oh, okay. Well,
yep.
Obviously, I'm not going to argue with why they sent it, because the man that runs this company is the richest man in the world. So if I get a yeehaw version of Three Houses, that's fine. It is what it is.
A yeehaw version. Like, everyone just has guns. They don't even have swords.
And cowboy hats. So, but yeah, pick that up. And I guess we're going to talk about a year-old game. That's totally fine, though. Which house did you pick first?
I haven't even started playing it yet.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
I've been an RPG burner at the moment, between Final Fantasy on PC and Three Houses and Chrono Trigger and...
I mean, all good choices, so understandable. When you do play it, we're going to have to talk about it, though. So
yeah, definitely.
Because really interesting. I mean, you probably saw my tweets online where I was saying that the school in this game is... ethics are highly questionable.
Yes. So. It has made your number one spot for questionable schools for endangerment.
Yes, over some notable ones like Hogwarts, the Jedi
Where
Academy.
Kids get murdered on a yearly basis.
Yes. But hear me out, though. None of those have like the mechanic where you can like romance the students. Like McGonagall's not trying to take Harry Potter out on like a date. Maybe she is. I don't know. J.K. Rowling changes the Harry Potter mythos every day, it seems like. So who knows at this point? I don't know.
You never see her when she's a cat. So only seen in one book. So, I mean, but, you don't know what happens.
Professor X isn't like trying to get with any of the students or anything. So, I mean, highly, highly questionable ethics that you just let this random guy roll in and start teaching. You'd be like, oh, let's have this young, attractive guy who's roughly the same age as teachers start teaching. What could possibly go wrong? What's that? Bandits are attacking the town? Let's send these untrained kids out to fight the bloodthirsty bandits. That's not questionable.
Eric, let me just put it this way. We played for years, still continuing to this day, a little game called Pokemon, where a 10-year-old is sent out with a fire-breathing lizard to fight terrorists.
True.
And fight other dangerous monsters that A, can poison, burn, steal souls, eat you.
Okay, You're right, but it's still not a school, technically. It's just a crazy old man that lives in your town that gives your 10-year-old son a smartphone. It's like, oh, go snap pictures of animals. And he's like, okay, make them fight. So, I mean, maybe I should include Professor Oak on that list just because his methods do seem a little questionable. Yeah,
just a little bit. Yeah.
It just reminds me of Dragon Ball Abridged when mm-hmm. I was watching it the other day and they were fighting Cell and he goes and 16 goes to blow himself up and finds out that Bulma took out his nuke. She was watching the tournament with Roshi. Roshi's like, why'd you do that? He's like, can you imagine if I told Chi-Chi that I nuked her son and Gohan and be like, oh, sorry, Chi-Chi, but the Hippocratic Oath and all. I don't know. It just reminded me of that. I don't know why. I still love that show. It makes me sad that they're not doing it anymore.
Yep. R.I.P. Team Four Stars Abridged.
Okay, anyways, let's get into some stuff we can talk about. So I want to lead off first thing because we've been talking about this for like a month now. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about Cyberpunk 2077.
Okay.
And I honestly think it kind of worked out because everybody kind of talked about Cyberpunk 2077 when it came out. And we're kind of talking about it after it's kind of been out in the world for a month. And some interesting stuff's been going on in regards to what's happening with all that. So do you have any initial thoughts or reactions on Cyberpunk? There's some stuff you want to talk
so
about.
Originally I definitely wanted to get into it because it kind of had that I wanted to play the game when I first saw it. It reminded me of like a Mass Effect cross like Sleeping Dogs kind of game. Did you ever play those games, the Sleeping Dogs games?
I did not play Sleeping Dogs. I did play Mass Effect though.
Okay, Sleeping Dogs you play like an undercover police officer who infiltrates a Chinese gang, and it gives you like kind of like Arkham Asylum combat, but
okay,
more fluid and actual martial arts based with slowdown with guns and stuff like that. So it's like a better Grand Theft Auto.
Makes sense.
So it's like that mixed with like this futuristic kind of ideals of everyone's getting enhanced, everyone can use like this these weird powers that just come with having cybernetics, I guess. And it kind of reminded me of like a Mass Effect thing where you can augment your character to have different abilities. That's what my initial thought of the game was going to be. Damn, was I let down. I haven't even played it, but from what I've seen of the game, I'm like, this is just Grand Theft Auto. This is just Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto 6.
let's hope that GTA 6 is better than that. Whenever we get that in 20 years time.
GTA Online has less bugs than Cyberpunk 2077.
And that's a game from 2012. Or something like that. That's an old game.
That's an online MMO game.
I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. There was a lot of hype around it, and this was the first game that I was kind of able to stand up to the hype machine. Mm-hmm. Like, in the weeks coming up to it, the buildup was so crazy, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go out and get Cyberpunk the day it comes out. But like as the days got closer, I had a bad feeling, and I just told myself, I'm not going to do it this time. I'm going to wait. I'm just going to see what happens. I don't even know if my middling range computer is strong enough to run this game, so I'm not going to bother getting it. And my fiance and I were talking about it, and I said if I was going to get it, I was going to get it on console. Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm glad I did not get it on console, because I don't have a base PS4 or a base Xbox. I got a 1X and a Pro, but still... Mm-hmm. I cannot believe, and I don't fault the developers for this at all. I think Cyberpunk is a beautiful game. I think they spent 8 years lovingly writing a story and designing an incredible world that looks amazing when you see some of the screenshots and gameplay on high-end PCs. Like, it's beautiful. It's absolutely stunning, the world they've created. And I respect the kind of story that they were going for, trying to tell us that this future that I feel like we're kind of heading towards with these body enhancements and things like that, that's an interesting story to tell. And especially having the ghost of Keanu Reeves in your head at all time, that's a really cool story premise. Like, that would be awesome. But I cannot believe, and it clearly feels like the PC version, I don't want to say it was ready, but it released in a better state. Not that there wasn't still bugs and glitches and stuff, but it looked like a complete game. And I can't believe that they sent this game out the door in the state that it was for base console games, for last-gen consoles. I mean, it looks bad. It looks really bad on, or it did when it came out, base-gen consoles.
Right.
That was shocking to me. So, and that's kind of what I've been thinking about the last couple weeks. Like, how did this happen?
I think the hype also got to the developers. So they were trying to get it out before the end of the year just to have something out there, which it happens a lot with games. I mean, look at the fiasco with fucking Sonic Boom. Everyone was all excited for that game, and look what we got.
We should have known as soon as they gave Sonic a neckerchief.
Yeah, and gave Knuckles sausage fingers.
This is game over.
It's game over. But, like, I don't know if anybody watches Game Grumps. If you have watched their playthrough of Sonic Boom, there is a glitch in the game. I think they fix it. But they were able to skip the entire game just by jumping, hitting the pause button, jumping again as Knuckles. Repeated over and over and over.
I did see that. You could, like, jump out of the game.
You can jump out of the game and end the game and say that you finished it. It was ridiculous.
I forgot that Sonic Boom was like that when it first released.
Yeah.
I just think we've forgotten about it. There was a lot wrong
with it. Textures would not load in. Characters who were supposed to be there were not there, even though they were quests. Voice lines would disappear. Random quests would just disappear.
Jesus.
And this is just from watching, because I am not a Sonic person. I don't play Sonic games. I have a problem with having a character made to go super fast and have to stop every 2 seconds on a platform.
Let's just say we're both of us are probably more in the camp of Team Mario.
Yeah.
If we had to pick a side.
I'm on a Capcom side. I'm a Mega Man person myself.
That's fair.
But, but I just feel like developers, because they see that there's so much hype for their game, and Cyberpunk got a lot of shit just from the delays and everything else, and people were getting a lot of, or giving them a lot of flack because they promised a day, and months later, people are still waiting. And I feel they felt rushed. I feel that they wanted to get something out so they could get the hype up again. And they just skipped a few steps to try and fix things and be like, oh, we'll put in patches later on. Because think of one game that doesn't have a patch day one after you buy the game, you put it in. You're like, oh, I'm ready to play this game. And then 3-hour update.
Yeah, I honestly can't think of one that's not like that. Pretty much ever since I got an Xbox One, I got an original Xbox One when it launched back in 2012. Was that 2013? One of those 2 years. Mm-hmm. I got one for Christmas, and I was so excited to play. But when I lived with my parents at that time in rural Illinois, where internet speeds weren't great, and my first game I got was Lego Marvel Superheroes. I remember it. That was the first game I got. And even that game, with the install time, with my slow internet speed, still took, like, had a huge patch day one.
Just give you a heads up, that game still has updates.
Does it really?
To this day.
Interesting. That was the first game I 1,000 point completed on the Xbox One. But yeah, I agree with all your points. And I went to college for business, so I've been trying to think about this on the business side a little bit just to make sense of it. You have to understand that making a game isn't just a group of people in a room making a game. that's what it is, but there's a whole business built around it.
There's departments for every single
There's
thing.
Marketing, there's mm-hmm. sales. You're mm-hmm. using this quote-unquote revolutionary game to get new investors to invest and buy shares of the company. Yep. So there's a lot that goes into this.
And so, in the middle of all this, certain companies get bought out and get replaced with other parts of other companies.
Right.
And this that's what we like to call the Microsoft advantage.
This team has been working on Cyberpunk 2077 since 2012. It was first mm-hmm. announced, I think.
Yep.
Early 2010s. And especially with everything stacked against them this year, I believe that the pandemic had something to do with it. Mm-hmm. Probably working from home on a game of this magnitude was really, really difficult to find and fix everything.
And that's the other problem with COVID. That puts a huge damper on being able to do what you're supposed to do when it comes to work. Like releasing or making a game with a home computer with half these people is not, it's not good.
No, it's definitely not. And you have to understand too, we give companies like EA and Activision and Blizzard and Microsoft, like big companies like that, a lot of shit because mm-hmm. of what they do. Mm-hmm. But just based on the nature of capitalism in this country, the manager's first priority isn't necessarily to the game that they're making. It's to the investors. If the investors yep. aren't making their money, you're not going to be in business much longer because the investors are just going to pull out and then you're going to go under. That's just how it is. So I'm feeling like I'm led to believe that management pretty much made the call to just ship this game out the door.
Yeah.
In whatever state it was. And the PR team did not do a good job of communicating to everybody and saying, hey, because all of the footage they showed was captured on PC. So they didn't do a good job. And being a person that major in marketing, you can't capture footage on a PC and then subtly lead people to believe this is what it's going to look like on console.
Right.
You're treading into a gray area there that's false advertising, which you can be sued for, mm-hmm. which is currently what's happening there. I know there's a lawsuit going in Europe and in the US that investors are suing CD Projekt Red because they feel they were misled by Cyberpunk 2077. And this game made a lot of money and lost a lot of money for them at the same time. They paid for this game's entire development cycle with just pre-orders before the game mm-hmm. even came out. It was fully yeah. paid for. After the game came out, their stocks took a bunch of hits and they lost investors a ton of money. And the way they came out with some statements that weren't really apologetic, it seemed.
No.
And even like Sony and Microsoft had to step in and be like, all right, we're offering refunds for this game, when it seemed like CD Projekt Red didn't really want to, but you know, Microsoft and Sony have their name to uphold, so they're not going to have this shit product like on their store front. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the pressure to get this out the door really screwed these guys over, and management made a really bad call. That's kind mm-hmm. of where I'm lined up on this whole argument. So
I would like to say, everyone complains about the glitches and whatnot in Cyberpunk. It's like one of the big things. Y'all play Witcher 3 and did not complain once. You even gave it Game of the Year. And that game has some broken shit in it.
Still an awesome game, though. Definitely. And same thing with that, too. Your point exactly. Y'all play Skyrim. Y'all play Fallout 4. Those games are broke as fuck, excuse my language, when they come out, and they're still broke. How many times have they remastered Skyrim, and it's still a glitch-filled mess?
Yep.
So, yep. Making a game of this scale,
I feel like Bethesda gets a pass because it's Bethesda, and it's to be expected.
Right, and those are kind of endearing things that happen in those games where, like, you're like, you launch a mini nuke at a mutant's head and it bounces off and like goes up into the air and like, or some crazy stuff like that happens. You're just like, oh, that's just Fallout. That's funny. Quick save, reload. But I feel like CD Projekt Red really pushed this as like a revolutionary, like this is the future of games. And we've seen this before. This is exactly the same thing that happened with No Man's Sky. They were like, this is revolutionary. You have quintillions of planets to explore. This is the future. And when you got the game, although No Man's Sky did launch in a better state than Cyberpunk did, it was at least a finished game. There just wasn't a lot to do.
True.
The difference being is that CD Projekt Red put out a bunch of statements that didn't really seem like they were sincerely apologizing. It just kind of seemed like they were trying to explain it off and saying, oh, we'll fix it later. And this is where I say you have to take a lesson from Hello Games. I think it's Hello Games, isn't it? Sean Murray Games, whoever made No Man's Sky. They got a lot of shit for lying to people about what that game was going to be. And they did the right thing. They sincerely apologized and they got back to work and they built that into a pretty good game.
Yeah.
So CD Projekt Red made their money back. Their investors lost money, sure, but it would go a long way for them to just apologize, say they messed up, and move forward in making this game something that can be played.
Right.
Instead of just kind of talking around it. I mean, it sucks to apologize and say, yeah, we screwed this one up, because I'm human. I hate doing that, too. I hate admitting when I'm wrong. I hate saying, yeah, I screwed this up. But in the long run, it's better for you to apologize, move on, and show your fans that you're going to make this something that they can enjoy rather than just dancing around it.
Right.
So that's kind of I've been having a lot of thoughts. That's kind of my thoughts on the current state of Cyberpunk 2077.
I get it. Definitely get it.
Sorry, I felt like I kind of rambled there. Do you have anything else you kind of want to add?
No, that you basically said what I was going to say. Like,
okay. I get really invested in like the business side of games just because it's interesting. And
see, I get into the psychological side of games.
That's why I love having you on the podcast. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a lot of push just to get it to make money to big top, big wig, pushing it out the door. And I feel it has to do with two parts. You have the people wanting the game, so the demand is extremely high, and you have the people who just want a product on the shelf so everyone can stop yelling at them.
True. And I also feel like, and I just thought of this too, because this game was originally announced in 2012, and now it's being launched in this weird in-between console generations kind of space where you have to make this game for older Xbox and PS4s, for One X's and PS4 Pros, and now for Series X and PS5, on top of PC, on top of Stadia, on top of all these other places where you can play it. So this team probably went from working on a few versions of this game to now having to optimize it across console generations because they ran out of time and then the previous generation expired and now you have to have your big game on the next generation. So it probably created a lot of extra work. And
yeah,
I honestly feel terrible for these developers who put their heart and soul. CD Projekt Red said they weren't going to crunch their developers, but they ended up crunching for months before this happened to get this game out. So it's just a really hard situation, and for the people that actually put the blood, sweat, and tears into this, I feel really bad. Just looking at my notes here real quick.
I see you have on there that IGN scored it a 9. IGN scores the shittiest of all games a 9, so I don't ever listen to them.
Yeah, that was a couple things I wanted to kind of talk about, and that's going to lead into a different conversation here. We kind of talked about rushing the game out the door. The next point was, do you think CD Projekt Red spoiled all the goodwill that they had built up with people of having several successful Witcher games out and this reputation as an amazing gaming company? Do you think that's kind of gone now?
I mean, I think every company has that one game that everyone thinks is going to do that. Like, let's see, for instance, everyone hated Resident Evil 6. Like, they actually hated it. And then 7 came out and everyone loved it again. So, I mean, every company goes through that, except for... How do I put this? It's like watching a YouTube apology video. You either have to, like, apologize and, like, sincerely apologize, or don't say anything at all.
Right.
Or else there's going to be backlash.
Say something else stupid.
Yeah. So I feel once you cross that line, that's where you're going to lose a lot of your reputation. And I feel with their apologies and whatnot, I feel that's what's going to hurt them more than the game itself.
That's honestly how I feel too, because that's why I mentioned No Man's Sky. And there's a right way to move forward from this point, and this is not the right way to do it.
No, definitely not.
It's, I just, man, I don't know. When you have a game that not only you lied to people about, but, you know, people's dicks are literally clipping through their pants, and when you drive a car, the character models are T-posing outside the car with their butts hanging out, and, you know, my last podcast where I interviewed my cousin 2 weeks ago, he said that he went to get on a motorcycle, or he saw a character get on a motorcycle, and they just got on air and rode off, like, you've got some work to do, and people, I've just found in my life experience that, you know, it sucks admitting you're wrong to people and you don't want them to be mad at you. But if you look at them and just say, honestly, hey, like, I messed up and we're going to try and make this better, then.
See, if that glitch was a 1 in a million, people would love it.
True.
Like the invisible motorcycle glitches and stuff like that. I feel that would be like somebody would have like a YouTube video specifically about that and just doing stupid shit about it.
Yeah.
But and because it's like consistent with multiple people, I feel that's the problem.
And we're not just sitting here hating on the glitches, because pretty much every game that we play has some glitch in it or another. Mm-hmm. I mean, we love Monster Hunter and we see it all the time. The monsters clip into the ground, or when, you know, when four monsters show up in the same area, they're clipping into each other's bodies, or, you know, my character has gotten hit by two tail swipes at once and then fallen through the stage and then just been falling endlessly into the abyss underneath the stage. And like, that stuff's funny because it doesn't happen that often, because it takes some serious circumstances to do that. But when it's just the game is almost unplayable to a point where it just breaks, that's a problem. Yeah, and you have to fix that. And just like I said, I've dealt with customers a lot. I've, you know, been a salesperson. It's better to just admit when you're wrong and tell people you're going to make it better and then make it better, because that's better for your reputation than kind of giving these circular apologies where you're not really apologizing, but you are, type of thing that they're doing. So,
right.
Yeah. So which leads to my next point here. I kind of had a little blurb about how the game was reviewed. And so a lot of different review sites scored this game differently. Obviously, IGN gives everything a 9. GameSpot only scored it a 7. And there were a lot of ranging review scores from, like, I'd say, like, 6 to 10. And this was on the PC version, because another kind of shitty thing that CD Projekt Red did was they only let people review the PC version.
Yep.
Before the review embargo. They didn't let people review the console version, and they didn't let, if you were going to make like a review video about it, you had to use their B-roll that they provided. You couldn't use any footage that you captured yourself. Yep. So this all points to that they were aware that maybe this game wasn't really ready yet.
Yeah. I mean, that was the same thing. Look, to go back to it, Sonic Boom. They did not have any review copies of anything whatsoever before they released the game. They just released the game. They did not have review copies. They didn't do anything like that.
And that's really weird, because I feel like that's a in this industry.
Yeah,
that's like a rite of passage that your game has to go through is to get reviewed. And
that's a ballsy move to try and release that, like, yeah, this big named character game.
And my head's been buzzing about this for the last month, because this is a bigger conversation than just, oh, IGN gave it a 9, because a lot of these companies scored this PC version, mm-hmm, and then the console version came out and they scored the console version separately. Mm-hmm. So we're getting into this weird era now where we're scoring different versions of games differently, I guess. And I'm trying to wrap my head around how that works, because I've felt for a long time that the arbitrary way that games are reviewed and scored is broken. Mm-hmm. I don't think, like, IGN reviewing a game and saying it's a 9. Okay, but what does a 9 like really mean? What does this tangible number tell me about the game? Like, that it's this individual person for IGN that scored it said it's a really good game. But like, what does that really mean? Like, what does a 9 on a game really mean? What is it trying to tell me? You know what I'm saying? When IGN can score something a 9, GameSpot can score it a 7, and me as a consumer, I'm trying to look at the reviews as like the source of trust of to whether I should get this game or not. Do you see what I'm trying to say? It's a weird...
It just seems like any time that IGN comes out with a number score, it's always based on pre-hype, not actually gameplay. So every time I've seen something like all the games that IGN usually gives nines is games like Call of Duty or things that are boosted. Like, I think the game, was it Skyrim, was also given a 9 or something like that. Yeah. So basically it's like super hyped games before launch are all given 9s, but everything that's like under the wraps, it just gives standard scores. So it goes based on people's view before they even play the game.
So my biggest thing about, and you're right, I agree with that 100%. The biggest thing I have about reviews is, I remember, so this is a story I'm going to tell. So I remember when Red Dead Redemption came out. Red Dead Redemption 2. It was a couple years ago, right? I think, or it was last year, 2 years ago. I don't know.
Last year, because it was up for Game of the Year last year.
That's right. And it came out without the multiplayer aspect of it, right? So it was just the Red Dead Redemption 2. It was just the standalone single player story with the promise that the online would come out later. So, and sure enough, week before release, everybody rushes to score their game, to score the game, get their review up, because, you know, the earlier you get your review up, the better.
Right.
So my whole thing was, and I kind of made a big stink about it on Twitter looking back then, I said, how can you review a game that's not all the way out yet? Because is the online aspect not a portion of this game? Mm-hmm. Would the online aspect not affect the overall score of this game?
Right.
And what they ended up doing is they scored the single player game and then they scored the online portion separate. And I said, well, that makes no sense, because you're not doing that. Or like the reviews I'd seen, you hadn't been doing that for games like Call of Duty, where you're scoring the whole thing together with the campaign. So, like, that doesn't really make sense to me the way you're doing this, because if you're scoring a part of this game one score and then the other part of it comes out later and you're scoring it another score. Mm-hmm. Like, how does that make any sense? Like, what overall, what does that tell me about this game? Not really anything, because your game should be judged as a whole product, not like this piecemeal thing that comes out.
Right, exactly.
And I think that's especially hard in today's atmosphere, where you can fix a game at will. You can change a game at will. A lot of these games are living games that constantly change. Mm-hmm. Overwatch gets patches every single week. The way Overwatch is played is changed every single week. The way Fortnite's played changes every single week. you know, if there's a game-breaking bug in a video game, it can be changed and fixed and made better. And quality of life improvements can be administered to a game over its entire life. So right. How can you score Overwatch when it comes out in 2015 when it's not the same game in 2021?
Yeah.
So I think this arbitrary kind of way of giving games scores is very archaic and kind of outdated. The way that we review games, the way that we talk about games, I just don't, and everybody's business model is built on that. I don't think that's sustainable anymore.
Nope. I agree with that.
Because, fuck, the game I'm playing today might not even, like, when Vice City came out for PS2, right, you could easily review it because that was the game you were getting.
Yes.
But GTA 5 and GTA Online have changed so much. Like, it's not the same game as when it came out. So, I mean, it's really a something that the industry's going to have to grapple with sooner or later, because people get so mad over these reviews and start review bombing when stuff doesn't go right and all this other stuff.
Yeah. And one of the ones that I have a big connection with, Overwatch. If you go back to the very beginning of Overwatch, you would not be able to recognize what that game was at all.
It was shockingly different.
Yeah, like, characters had different abilities, characters did different things, different walk speeds, different shooting speeds, different weapons in general. Maps were laid out different.
Do you remember how powerful OG McCree was?
Oh yeah.
Launch McCree was unfucking believable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Hanzo Scatter Arrow?
Oh, yeah. The shoe shooter.
Just to name. Yeah, you hit it just right. All the arrows go in the person's foot and you just die.
The three things that I always go back to whenever I think of OG Overwatch is Symmetra's complete change. Because Symmetra was able to shoot shields at people.
Oh, yeah.
And she could actually shoot them out of her gun like a moving projectile thing, so she could run forward while her shield is moving in front of her.
Yeah.
And she could lay down a teleporter or shield generator. Now, she still has a teleporter, but she cannot give shields anymore. Torbjorn could literally just turn his turret into a fucking tank.
Dude, yeah, launch.
He didn't shoot lava. No, he would like hit his turret with his hammer. It would go up level tiers with different like weapons and whatnot, and when you use your ult, it turns into a monster of a tank.
Early years Torbjorn was a nightmare. Yeah.
And then the original cancer that was Overwatch, that still is to this day, but it's a little bit better. Bastion.
I knew you were gonna say it.
A fucking shield in the beginning of Overwatch. A turret that didn't have to reload until after 400 shots, that could wreck any shield in a matter of seconds, got a shield itself.
That's not even counting the defense that you could put on top of it by giving it armor or additional shields.
And he can self.
Yeah.
So, I mean, looking at that game, how it was to now, there's balancing involved. There's different things that they see. They're like, you know what? This doesn't really fit the character. Let's set up the structure. There used to be four categories of heroes in Overwatch. There's only three. They're like, right. We don't need defensive heroes.
Because they couldn't figure out what it was meant by defensive hero. Everyone is just like, what's a defensive hero?
Yeah, it's like, okay, so you have Torbjorn. He sets up turrets. Okay, that's defensive because it's meant to hold a point. Okay, Hanzo. Why is a sniper a defensive hero?
Real talk, though, Overwatch Tower Defense was the best game with Torbjorn, honestly. Yes.
I will agree with that.
So you have a game that's radically different that you could say was a 9 when it came out, or it was a 7 when it came out. Like, I keep using No Man's Sky as an example, but I feel like it's a positive example. That game wasn't a trash game when it came out. There's just nothing to do. It was a solid, if I had to score, I would say it was probably like a solid 6.5 or 7 for me. Mm. Now, having gone back and played it, it's probably like 8.5, right in there. So, I mean, it's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, it has gotten better. So, I just can't play it for a long period of time.
No, because the feeling of...
to another planet is putting me to sleep.
Right, and the feeling of existential loneliness is giving me dread. Every time I fly to a planet that there's nothing living on. So, it's just... you just can't score these games this way anymore. I think the industry's due for a really big change. And then I just don't know how to, and then to, cause sometimes when you get these big ass games, right? Like Cyberpunk 2077 is a really big game.
Yes.
It takes several hours to play through. So, and usually reviewers are getting these games maybe a week or two before, if they're lucky. So you're asking somebody that to review a game mm-hmm. in a time span of 2 weeks that could take several hundred hours to fully like explore and appreciate. I don't know about you, but I've had the cases of I've played certain games for long periods of time and then just gotten sick of them and gotten burnt out on them.
Yeah.
Even though they've been like, okay, games. Like I remember like the first year Monster Hunter was out, I played Monster Hunter a lot, mm-hmm. a lot. I played it a lot. And after like 4 or 5 months of just sinking in so much time, I was just like, I'm sick of this. So if you're forcing a person to play that much Cyberpunk early, like let's say 80 hours of Cyberpunk in 2 weeks, like that's a lot of game to play in 2 weeks.
Right.
So for me, that would influence my review. I would feel like mm-hmm. I would be like, oh, this game is like, because all reviews have human emotion and human likes tied to them. So by the time I got to the end of trying to play 300 hours of Cyberpunk in 1 week, I would probably just want to just fucking say this game's a one and throw it in the trash bin. So there's stuff like that to consider. I think you have to redo the way games are talked about instead of just like, oh, the game does this, and this, and it's an arbitrary score. It's a set like a 9 and you should go buy it or whatever. And I'm kind of a big fan of the way Polygon does it,
yes.
Because Polygon just kind of does an open-ended review where like they'll tell you if the game is good or if it's not good, but they don't like score it.
Yeah.
Kotaku gives it burritos, I think, instead of numbers, which is kind of quirky, but.
And it has my attention because I am a big fan of burritos.
And I know Kotaku gets a lot of hate for some of the stuff that they write, but I was scrolling on their website the other day and they did this funny series a couple years ago where they reviewed the IGN review of a game mm-hmm. and told the person whether or not they should like read the review, and they scored the review. And I thought that was just kind of a hilarious take on this kind of like that. So I don't know. That just kind of led me to think about all that in conjunction with where we were with Cyberpunk 2077. So sorry for a weird side quest there. Do you have anything else you want to talk about with that? Because
I'm good with that.
Okay. I just think and that's partially the reason why I wanted to start this podcast, is because I wanted to have a different conversation around games mm-hmm. rather than just, oh, this game's good, this game's bad, this game looks pretty, it does this, that. 9 out of 10, go buy it. I really wanted to talk about what was actually happening with the game, with the people around the game, with the business environment of the game, just stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I went on this tangent. So, yeah. Okay, let's move on to a segment. I'm calling it the 2020 Roundup. So what I'm going to do is we're going to talk about some stuff we did this year. Tom, I hope you're ready.
I am ready.
And one of the things that you did this year can't be stayed in my house because there is a pandemic outside, because everybody.
Actually, technically, I did not, because I was an essential worker. So.
Right. Construction don't stop. Construction don't stop. Medicine don't stop.
Medicine don't stop.
So let's just talk about some of the stuff we did this year. Some of the stuff we played. Talk about some of your favorite games this year. What did you play? It doesn't have to be a game from 2020. It can just be anything.
Favorite game from this year.
Or top five games that you played. Or just
five.
Stuff you got around to playing this year. Stuff you did that you had a really good time doing.
I'll go with the things that I spent the most time doing. I'll go with that, because most of those are the ones that I enjoyed more.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is definitely, I'm going to keep going back to it every single time, Persona 5. because
knew that was coming.
Because Persona 5 Royal came out this year, and it took the original game and turned it into something amazing. Which the first game I already found amazing. I just felt that it deserved more this year. But with all the stuff going on, I think it kind of... people didn't want to do a school life when they couldn't go to school.
What other school would you rather go to than Japanese anime school? Like, come on.
I mean, it would reach the top of your list.
Live your fantasy. Probably, honestly. It sounds like it would.
Oh, trust me. It would have. Let's see. So I was playing that. I played a lot of Granblue Fantasy Versus, which is the Granblue universe, anime universe, fighting game made by, I think it was Psy Games and Arc System Works. Yes, it was. Who do the Guilty Gear series. It's a great fighting game. It's a very simple fighting game. So it's very good, a good start for people who aren't used to fighting games, because it kind of, it simplifies things, but it can be made more difficult if you want to learn something more complex. So it gives to both sides, which I haven't seen since Killer Instinct for the Xbox.
I like that. So it's easily accessible, but it gives you a really high skill ceiling.
Yes. Like they fixed their internet. I'm hoping it's back to working, so there isn't as much draw frames. But if they have fixed it, then that would definitely be my fighting game this year.
I feel like, not to interject here, but fighting games have notoriously bad reputation for shitty online.
Oh, because here's the thing. When you're doing a fighting game, the physics that they put into fighting games, when you try to do a netcode for it, it doesn't work depending on the relay of where you are. It's based on different companies' internet speeds, different companies, or different people's computer outlooks, like the rebound time from one server to another. Like, there's a bunch of things that you mix into it. And the online in fighting game, it sucks though, because with everything going on right now, online's the only way you can really play these. There's no more arcades. Can't go in the arcade and be like, hey, I want to throw on Mortal Kombat. Have somebody fight me here. Nope.
And I was going to say, especially with fighting games, the in-person nature of it, some of the biggest esports tournaments are fighting games. So yeah, with things like Evo being pushed online, how do you play Smash Melee tournaments with not able to get together?
Oh, Smash Online with tournaments. Don't even bother. Don't even bother.
So I just wanted to say that sounds like an interesting thing this year, just because of everything that was going on. So not to side quest you, but continue on.
It makes sense. Let's see. I played a lot of Monster Hunter.
Yeah, we did.
A lot of Monster Hunter. We played a lot of Monster Hunter.
We killed some fucking dinos this year.
When did I actually get this game? Beginning of the year, I think. On here, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, I don't think we started hunting together about halfway through the year, but...
Yeah, it wasn't until like June, July that we started playing that. And I'm already at 85 hours.
Yeah, let's go.
I love it. So there's definitely a lot of that. Power Rangers Battle for the Grid. You'll notice a lot of my list is probably going to be fighting games.
Hell yeah.
Because when I want to pick something quick, fighting games is usually what I go for.
Definitely.
And like I said, I'm on a Final Fantasy kick. But for the longest time this year, especially in the beginning of the year, I was back in the hack. It's kind of hack and slash, I guess.
Definitely.
But like Nier Automata, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, those kind of games.
Oh, yeah. I remember, yeah, earlier this year, you were playing all of them.
Yeah, and I was like, I won't have hair at the end of this, but I'll still play them.
I'm like, why are you doing this to yourself when COVID's going on? I was like, oh, how's it going? You're like, just got done playing Bloodborne. Gonna go de-stress. I'll be like, okay, man, take it easy.
So what are your games this year?
So I really tried to make a point. This year was difficult for games just because this is the first time I've ever moved in and lived with somebody. And we got we bought a new house and just kind of everything with that. I did make it a point to play things this year that I've been meaning to get around to. Mm-hmm. And the first really big one I played and completed and was really proud of myself was Hollow Knight.
See, I want to play Hollow Knight. I own Hollow Knight. But the last three times I've tried to play Hollow Knight, it was on our old PlayStation 4.
Ooh.
And it crashed. And lost all my data.
That sucks.
When I was already 5 hours in.
Oh, that sucks, because that's a significant amount of gameplay. But I had played it a few times. I'd always loved the world. I think it's combination of difficulty combined with being a really good spiritual successor to a Metroidvania game
definitely
made it incredible. And for me, I'm not a person that plays difficult video games. I'm just not. I kind of miss the train on Dark Souls and Bloodborne and all that stuff. And I accept that they are really amazing, incredible games. I just never probably going to be able to play them. So right. Hollow Knight was kind of this challenging game that I could play in bits and chunks. And if I were you, I would definitely, if you have the extra money, pick it up on Switch. That's the optimal way to play it because it's handheld on the go. Like it's, mm-hmm. I played it a lot while we were just sitting on the couch watching shows and kind of withering the pandemic away. It was fantastic. And that game has just such incredible atmosphere, incredible music, incredible mechanics, boss fights, the whole world, the lore that kind of does the same thing that Dark Souls and Bloodborne do, where they kind of hide the lore in like some of the items and some of the little observations you can make in the game. It doesn't just straight up tell you what happened. Mm-hmm. And just kind of how overwhelmingly just sad the atmosphere of that game is at the same time.
Right.
And for a, you know, small indie maker, I think it's Team Cherry, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. That game was incredible, and I finally finished it. I didn't go back and do, like, every single ending, and I didn't play all the DLC, but I got through it in time for the sequel to come out, so I'm really excited about that.
Did you ever watch the animated YouTube series? It's not really a series, it's more like a plot or a pilot that they did for a Has-Been Hotel and stuff like that.
I did not.
Okay. One of the characters in here, I think it's from the DLC, but I'm not 100% sure. The big red bug guy.
Okay.
His design, it looks like it was torn straight out of that animation series.
Oh, really?
Like, the artwork on it looks so similar that I'm like,
interesting. Huh. I wonder if those are going on around the same time, might have been inspired by or something like that.
Could be.
So,
could be.
So that was one I'm really happy I finally got to finish playing. I went back and played Octopath Traveler. That's a
Time commitment right there.
It is. And like I said, I played a lot of these when we were just like laying around, when we were like chilling in bed. Mm-hmm. So I kind of play these in chunks over a long period of time. I enjoyed Octopath. It was really good. I wouldn't say it's a groundbreaking RPG just because it's kind of bare bones. Like once you get the combat down, it kind of does what it does. But I really like the concept of a split up story, the story of all these different characters, and just kind of being able to choose like where you go and what you do next. I really enjoyed that concept. And of course, I love an old school kind of pixel RPG in that art style. And the music, of course, is incredible, too. So really glad I got to finish that one. Mm-hmm. So those are the two games that I wanted to cross off my list this year. And I crossed them off. The rest of my year was spent between, obviously, like you said, we played a lot of Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. And I still love that game. It's so much fun. It's just, I don't know what it is about Monster Hunter. I always hated the series up until World. But that game's just a ton of fun, and they kept adding monsters. I've been trying to catch up so I can do all the monster fights before the new one comes out. And so, and we spent a lot of time too getting a lot of our friends caught up, because we'd always have someone wander on stream and be like, oh, what's this? And then they get the game and then they want to play with us. So we'd go back and try and catch them up, which is that's a lot of fun too, because the game's definitely a lot more fun to play with people.
Right. And it gives you a chance to kind of, when you're treating it that way, you can also, like, it gives you the opportunity to get materials that you just don't really want to go back to find, but it gives you the option to go back and find them.
It definitely does. I've gotten a lot of materials and money that I needed from doing this stuff with you guys. Mm-hmm. So that's been an awesome boon. Mm-hmm. And then the only other game this year, like, I played the usual slew of 2020 releases. Final Fantasy VII was awesome, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the game, one that I really enjoyed this year, they released Super Mario 3D All-Stars. Mm-hmm. And that game took me back because I had never played 64 all the way to the end. I had never played Sunshine, and I never played Galaxy. And so I was able to cross off three really big things that I wanted to play. And just going back and being able to appreciate those games was absolutely amazing, especially on the Switch. Having Mario 64 and Sunshine and Galaxy on the Switch is incredible. Mm-hmm. I was hoping they'd do that for a long time. It also made me realize, as much as I love 64, I hate the camera on 64. The camera is so annoying. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, the camera on that game is not good.
At the time, though, that was incredible. I don't know. But that was a lot of fun, and I will always hold a special place in my heart for Mario. Super Mario World was the first game I ever played when I was three, so... Mm-hmm. Getting to go back and play some of those Mario games that I missed when I was younger was awesome. So yeah, that's pretty much my year this year. So mm-hmm. everything that I can think of. So yeah. So let's move forward looking to this year, 2021. What are you most looking forward to this year, Tom? What do you got your eye on, or what do you, it can be anything. It can be games. It can be stuff after the pandemic calms down. What are you looking forward to most? He's got a laundry list.
That's a good question. Actually, no, I really don't. But
oh, really? If you want to think about it a little bit, I can go first.
You go ahead.
Okay. There are a couple things. So first and foremost, right off the bat, Monster Hunter Rise for Switch. So excited for that. That looks freaking awesome. You can have doggos. It's basically like World on the Switch. It's going to be sweet. So pumped for that. We're probably going to be playing some of that. I would think so. Definitely that. Probably. That's probably my game I'm most excited for. And just because that, and just because I can't think of what other games are coming out next year. Because I'm panicking. So something that I've really missed this year, and I hope it's still around next year, is, I know it's cliche, I miss going to see movies with people.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I know that movie theaters are expensive and it's just like cliche, but there's something about going to see a movie with somebody that is kind of an experience you can't really replicate.
Yeah. My daughter's 4 years old. I would like to actually go to a movie theater and watch a movie with her there.
Right. I mean, that's an integral part of growing up, I feel like, is going mm-hmm. to see your parents taking you to see, like, some of my fondest memories are my parents took me to see Toy Story, and mm-hmm. the first movie I ever saw with my parents was Lion King. And I feel, as much as I appreciate being able to stream a new movie in my house right away, like we did with Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. I feel like a movie theater is just kind of like a rite of passage. It's just kind of like a cultural institution, you know? And I hope we get some of that back. The last movie Taylor and I went and saw together is we went and saw My Hero Academia, Heroes Rising before. And that was a week before the pandemic shut us down. And I've just really missed that because the movie theater experience I've missed a lot. What else am I looking forward to this year? Oh, I'm looking forward, supposedly rumored, staying on the anime train. Season 5 of My Hero Academia is supposed to be coming this spring.
Yep.
Definitely looking forward to that. My year is kind of front loaded after that. I don't really. and then if my fiance ever listens to this, I should probably say looking forward to our wedding, which we are currently planning for the end of the year. Those are my
really? Okay. Things. Got it.
Oh, and something else too. But the wedding is the most important thing if she's listening. Is also, I believe, the 25th anniversary of Pokemon this year.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So I'm looking forward to see what kind of cool stuff happens with that. I'm hoping we get maybe a Diamond Pearl remake.
Oh, that would be sick.
That would be sweet. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to this year. So
maybe there'll be like everything else that was original. Like maybe everything's going to be crossover and they're going to put Pokemon games on PC so you can just get them all right there.
Oh, that would be so. Honestly, if Nintendo just did like a Nintendo shop on the PC and just optimized a bunch of their games for PC, that would be awesome.
Yeah, because they don't have to integrate with Steam. They can make their own thing and process that way.
Just buy out all the legal emulators and just do that. Yeah. So,
let's see. I'm kind of going through. So the problem is, like, I'm very excited for My Hero. I've read ahead, so I know what's going to happen.
I'll be honest, I've read ahead and caught up, so I know what's going to happen too, but I'm still very excited.
But the shows that I'm really excited for, anime-wise, they keep pushing it back to 2022. So
really? Which ones, like, are those?
Rise of the Shield Hero.
Oh, really?
It was supposed to be coming out this year. But last I checked, they said it was going to be pushed back 2 years.
Oh, is that just because of the pandemic? Or?
I think so. Or due to budgets and everything. And I'm so upset.
Well, that's why I was surprised that when they came out and said they were expecting My Hero to debut in the spring, I was like, wow, especially with the pandemic, we just had season 4 and not terribly long ago.
My Hero has that Shonen Jump / Crunchyroll / Funimation budget, so they can do whatever the hell they want.
That's why they're able to put out 5 seasons of My Hero in the same time frame as barely as many seasons as Attack on Titan or some of these smaller guys.
Yes. In games wise, I'm gonna go back to it again. Persona 5 Strikers.
Yeah, as I was gonna say,
coming out.
As soon as I saw that, I tagged you in the tweet. I'm like, Tom, look.
But other than that, we have Disgaea 6 coming out. I am a big fan of the strategy RPGs.
Yeah.
So like Final Fantasy Tactics and Disgaea, stuff like that. So Disgaea 6 is coming out. Persona 5 Strikers, No More Heroes 3. I don't know if you've ever played No More Heroes, but that game is
not.
It's on the Nintendo Switch now. 1, 2, and 3 will be out on Switch.
Oh, then Switch is the most handy thing ever because that's how I play almost everything nowadays.
Gotham Knights, I'm really excited about.
Okay.
Horizon Forbidden Wilds.
Is that going to be this year?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, that's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a fight, though, because that is supposed to come out around the same time as God of War Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah. If those both come out, yeah, that's going to be true.
So those are games-wise what I'm looking forward to.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot that we're forgetting. I just didn't make a list of stuff because I'm lazy. Yeah. That's just the top of my head. I would be really excited if they did a Diamond and Pearl remake. I think that would be sweet.
Yeah, I could see that.
Bring it into, and if they did it on the Switch too, which I feel like now moving forward, they have to.
Yeah.
Because I haven't heard anything significant about the 3DS and maybe.
If they did like a bulk pack, like they did with like the Mega Man Legacy collection.
If they just did a bunch of them.
And they did like green through, or not green, red through. Let's see, what would, like the Emerald games, Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald.
Would you want them to do the old versions, or would you want them to do like Fire Red and like Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire?
What,
like,
if
the remakes?
They did it in a way where you could play one or the other?
Oh, you like switch back, like how the Master Chief Collection, you can switch back and forth.
Yeah.
Between the, that would be fucking wild.
Because if you think about it, the original Red version, it's what? A couple of megabytes of data,
if that. Yeah.
If that, and then you upgrade it to like Fire Red and it's only a little bit more.
Right.
So if you switch between those two and then you have like a deluxe edition, which is like, oh, Switch version. Sells itself.
Yeah. Would sell Switches too, probably. Switches probably, and yeah. All of the games. That would be sweet to do.
Especially
yeah, that
with
would be awesome.
The DSs kind of going obsolete. I mean, when was the last game that came out for the 3DS that was making everybody jump for joy?
I mean, I really can't think of one. The last significant purchase I think I got for the 3DS was maybe Sun and Moon, maybe Smash Bros. For the DS. That was a while ago. Yeah. So that's the last thing I can think of.
I think the last thing I purchased for the DS, and I think it was an older game, was Samus Returns.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was the last one I purchased.
I think the Switch is your new handheld, honestly. Yeah. It's where it is. But yeah, I mean, a collection like that would be sweet, where mm-hmm. just all of those, especially if they did. Like, I love Gold and Silver, but if they redid my favorite version of all time, Heart Gold and Soul Silver.
Same.
That would be amazing. That same. Would be so cool. God, I can't, like, just, yeah, put all those in, like, one collection and sell for $60 and you'll make all the money. Easy. And remake Diamond and Pearl. Just do both.
Can you imagine if they had, like, the Switch version of Heart Gold Soul Silver where you go to, like, Rage Lake and you see, like, all the Gyarados and shit, like, just thrashing around?
Yeah, I would be a huge fan. That, oh, God, that would be fucking awesome. I can wish, but we'll see. I don't know. Who knows? Okay, anything else?
Nope.
Okay. I guess the 2020 topics kind of all roll into each other. We've kind of already talked about them. So,
yeah.
I just really hope that things can kind of get back to normal this year once, you know, everything with the vaccine goes through and, you know, mm-hmm. the pandemic kind of burns out. I miss being able to go see my family. I miss family. Right. I didn't realize how much I took that for granted until we didn't have those sorts of things. I just really kind of just avoided public places in general. Like, I'd like to be able to, like, me and my friends used to go bowling all the time. I'd like to be able to go bowling again.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I saw a funny tweet about bowling. Somebody said, they were like, we used to eat food with our hands and then stick three fingers into holes in a ball that other people had sucked their dirty fingers into and then just eat more food like we were invincible gods. And I'm like, oh, and you put it that way.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Really yeah. crazy, some of the stuff we kind of used to do.
Yeah.
Now that you think about it a little more.
Cover your hands in baby powder and yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Sit on the same sweaty gym equipment that everybody used to.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it would be nice just to see kind of just to be able to go out and interact with people without fear again would be really cool. Mm-hmm. And to be able to have it not impact the wedding that I'm planning because it's already stressful enough.
That was our biggest concern.
Right.
We had ours. So.
That's right. You guys did have to go through all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember. Wow.
Yep. Back in September.
I'm probably going to be messaging you a lot and be like, Tom, I can't do this.
You'll be fine.
Pour me the Tom special where it's 85% liquor and 15% soda. Just do that. So
I'm all out of soda, so I can give you the liquor, but
that's fair. Just put a straw in it. Bendy straw. Just bendy let's straw. Go. But hey, as terrible as 2020 was, if you're listening, I just wanted to say you made it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of terrible things could have happened. A lot of terrible things maybe did happen. But through it all, you made it. And that's not something to scoff at. You know, that's a lot of people went through a lot of things this year. And
you finished campaign 2020. Please roll for level up status.
Yeah. And hopefully everyone gets a really good level up with lots of hit points. Lots of, you know, stat boost, maybe get some new feats.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you leveled up and you get a new character archetype. I don't know.
Maybe lower the attack a little bit. We've had enough of that.
Yes. Maybe stay off the screens a little bit, too, because that made this year interesting, too. Everything that was happening.
Don't tell me what to do.
You're right. I'm sorry. But I just want to wish everybody, I just want to tell you, go into 2021 with an open heart, open mind, and do the best you can. and everything will be just fine. Just don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's not true.
Yeah. And so, if you don't have an open heart and an open mind, just keep quiet about it. You have your opinions. Everyone has theirs. Just let things be and just let it go.
Have you ever seen the movie Semi-Pro?
Yes,
I have. Will Ferrell?
Yes, I have.
I always scream at everybody at work his motto he has on the wall, everybody love everybody. So that's what I encourage everybody to do. Just, you know, you might be surprised at how much in common you have with that person that you hate. So, yeah, it'll be a good year. Positive thinking. And we all know what happens if you have a bad heart. You get taken over by a bald man who turns out to be 13 different guys and try to destroy the world.
Yep.
If Kingdom Hearts.
You don't want to go through that black ooze bath.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And you definitely don't want to have a guy voiced by Leonard Nimoy possessing your body. Yeah. Or maybe you do. I don't know.
And you will probably end up getting stabbed at least 3 or 4 times throughout the entire series. It could be you. It could be another you. But eventually you will get stabbed.
And you'll find no matter what happens, all of your best evil laid plans are no match for the power of a spiky anime haired protagonist and the power of friendship. So, doesn't really matter.
Nothing like a 13-year-old with cartoon friends who will teach you the power of friendship.
Right.
Into the light.
Right.
Maybe accompanied by Mickey Mouse.
True. And or several other spiky anime haired protagonists. Possibly Disney heroes. We'll see.
But not in number 3 because they lost the rights to Final Fantasy. So
yeah, they were finally tired of Nomura's stuff. They're like, even Final Fantasy's like, dude, Nomura, just keep us out of this, man. Leave us alone.
We have our own thing working on this year. So he's just
right. We have a man with an angel wing that we have to bring to life. Just leave us out of your crazy stuff, okay?
Yeah, like, I mean, we have. Remake come out. We have to have some surprises for Smash. I mean,
can I just give a word of advice for Square Enix in 2021? Make a Sephiroth DLC for Kingdom Hearts 3. Fact that he is not a boss in that game is a travesty.
Not a secret, like harder than the last boss.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, that's tradition. He has to be. Tradition. Like, just
but
do
we
it.
We also didn't get any Tifa Cloud one-liners this game either. So I mean. Or sassy Squall.
You have to admit the
voiced
best
by Angel.
The best scene in KH2 is when the Heartless Invasion is going on in Hollow Bastion, and it's like a 14-minute cutscene of everybody fighting stuff, and Cloud and Squall are in the ravine together.
Yep.
Standing back to back, just having like a mopey emo, like one line with each other is like, oh, might be hard if one more shows up. And then Squall's like, oh, I guess I'll take care of that one. Just like delivering the lines with no emotion and then just proceeding to just go and whoop ass. Like,
in that scene, all the Final Fantasy archetypes were all grouped together.
Yeah, honestly, so, like, they were.
So, like, they were all just kind of like, okay, you're going to be the protagonist. So, you guys are going to go fight your fight over here. Sid, you're gonna go over here because you're by yourself in this one. Yuffie and Tifa, you're gonna go over there. And who do we have for magic users? Oh yeah, Aerith, you're still alive, so you get to go over here.
They should have just Aerith her during that scene, honestly.
No, that's what they're doing. That next DLC is gonna be the Aerith DLC for Kingdom Hearts 3.
Oh. let's do it. I'm really happy that a lot of people got to experience that for the first time, that pain of loss. My girlfriend didn't know that was going to happen. And so every she'd keep asking me, she'd be like, oh, do you think, are Aerith and Cloud going to end up together? And I'd just be like, maybe, I don't know what's going to happen. And then, so she doesn't know what's going to happen.
Oof.
So, yeah, she doesn't know what's coming.
Listen, my wife has never played a Final Fantasy game, will never play a Final Fantasy game, but she knows what happens. So.
I told her that I'm not going to tell her what happens. She has to experience it with me. So.
She was watching me play the game, and she walked in the room, and she goes, oh, is that the girl that dies? And I'm like, thanks.
Not yet. Not yet. It's too soon.
But thanks.
Right. So, well, like we said, we wish a lot of you best of luck in 2021. I'm sure everything's going to get better. You just believe us and believe in the power of friendship, and everything will be fine. nothing could possibly
go wrong. It's the power of love.
Right, exactly. all right, so to kind of top everything off, I gave a holiday greeting. I did want to announce a couple of things that I want to do this year. And I've talked to Tom about them briefly. So whether or not he decides to do them, I guess it's up to him. He can let me know on the pod right here, right now. Just be like, no, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. So we want to do, like I said, I wanted to get the pod going, and then I want to start diversifying some of the offerings that we're doing. So I'm planning to launch three kind of separate sub podcast, like podcast shows, I guess you call it, like three kind of like mini series within the podcast that aren't like the mainline side questing podcasts, but are like different podcasts. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's really cool because Anchor, the tool that I use to distribute the podcasts through Spotify and some of the other ones, has like a tool where you can mark certain shows as like season one episode, like whatever. So you can build like little mini casts the main cast. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I want to do a show called Filler Arc. Mm-hmm. It's about anime. Mm-hmm. And I want to do in-depth dives about anime seasons, where we watch a few episodes and discuss it every show. You know, just kind of discuss where the story is, what we're being told, you know, what we like and don't like about the world. Just kind of a more in-depth look at the story, instead of just, oh, anime, like, it's that was cool show and this character's really cool. Like, we really want to talk about the story and where things kind of go with that. And it's gonna be called Filler Arc, because everyone knows the best parts of anime are always filler arcs. So especially when, you know, Goku and Frieza spend 57 episodes fighting on Namek.
That wasn't even a filler.
It wasn't even filler. You're right. It was just regular. that was the most clever anime name that I could think of. And so I have to hurry up and make artwork for that before it gets stolen. So Tom, what I'd like to do is I'd like to do that one. And I'd like to start with My Hero, since season 5 will be coming out about that.
I'll give you the first topic of filler arc for My Hero. How shitty would you feel if the first person born with a quirk was only that he was a light bright?
Yeah, it's true. Pretty much a snap glow stick. When they spanked him, he just turned on. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll get into that. So I'm what you call, Tom is an anime aficionado, I would say. He knows more about it than I probably will ever hope for. It's not been something that I've watched
a lot.
There's
a title for those. They're called weebs.
No, you're not. You're a connoisseur of entertainment from Japan. Like, there's nothing like, that's what it is. But Tom is much more versed in anime than I am. And I wanted to start with one that I knew, because I'm slowly getting there, but I'm still more one of those casual anime fans where, like, I watch the big ones, you know. But eventually, like, when we do a couple, I'd like to for you to go like, okay, we're gonna watch this one, and it's a little more obscure one that I don't know. Because I think that'd be really fun. So that's kind of the plan for that. We're gonna do that, and we'll maybe try to do like maybe one or two like separate episodes on that, like little half hour chunks every month. The next one I'm officially calling the Hall of Game. I don't know if that name's been taken yet, but I was searching it the other day and it doesn't seem like one to. What Hall of Game is going to be is it's going to be, we're going to pick a game every quarter. So every business quarter. So like January, February, March is the first quarter. So in March, I'm planning to, we'll pick a game. We'll play the game. We'll think about it. We'll talk about it over the course of the first quarter. And then we'll have the game be inducted into the Hall of Game. And we'll discuss a little bit more about that, but essentially what it's going to be is which games really kind of push the genre forward, which games kind of stand above the rest as exemplary titles, things like that. We'll come up with some criteria as to how we judge that. And it'll really just be an in-depth dive about that game. You know, the climate in which it was made, what was going on when it was made, some of the people, some of the, you know, the gameplay, some of the more obscure things. And we'll just do kind of like a big old episode about that game in particular. And I figured that would be a good game to kind of highlight some of our favorite games, some of the games that we think are really good, and some of the games that without them, gaming wouldn't be the same. So I'm really excited about that one. Don't think the name's been taken yet, but if it has been, I'll change it to something else.
like the podcast, we will change it on notice.
Right. Haven't gotten sued yet, but that could very well change as well. So, and then the third thing I want to do is a title of this mini cast is called Replay! Exclamation point. Don't know if that's going to stick yet because I haven't really thought of anything else, but that'll be essentially kind of the Hall of Game. But Hall of Game, I really want to reserve for like an honorary, like this game deserves to be in there. Replay will just be like us choosing one of our favorite games to play and just kind of talking about it, just to kind of hone in on specific games in general.
How about we call it Crashback?
Crashback.
We're going to break down our old games that were our favorites.
Okay, so as of this moment, it's going to be called Crashback. And that'll be our new Crash Bandicoot podcast. Exclusively about Crash Bandicoot. No, I like that. So that's just going to be like maybe Tom and I'll just go and play like a random RPG. Not necessarily a game that we think is like the greatest game of all time, but it's a game that we love and a game that we'd like to talk about. Because like I said, when I started this podcast, I talked with you. I did want to talk more in depth about games, and that's how we're going to do that. So that's kind of the ideas.
I would not recommend a JRPG just because it would take us probably about 2 months to finish one.
Yeah.
And if we're doing every quarter, I don't know if that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's true. And obviously, too, that's kind of what I want to do. But obviously, like I said, you and me have a lot of other things going on in life. You have a full time job. You stream and you have a family. And I'm trying to plan a wedding. I have a a job. So a lot of this will be subject and a dog child. So a lot of this will be subject to change. This is just kind of the things that we want to do. I definitely want to do Filler Arc, and I think we're going to be starting that one soon. And then between Hall of Game and Crashback, we'll see like how that ends up working out. Maybe Hall of Game will have to be maybe a little later.
Okay.
So, but that's kind of the idea. That's kind of, I just wanted to outline for anybody that listens to this kind of where we want to go in 2021 and beyond.
Got to diversify that portfolio.
Right. And who knows? We might come up with other things. Maybe we'll do a podcast where Tom and I open Pokemon cards. Maybe because people seem to be doing the videos, but nobody has the market cornered on podcast Pokemon card openings.
You just have to take our word for what we have.
Right. Oh, my God. There are 11 Charizards in this pack. Just all it's like, yeah, no, that didn't actually happen. So we'll see. We'll come up with a bunch of other stuff and let you know. But
I will let you know that according or due to the filler arc part of our cast, I am trying to find ways to stream it on my Discord.
Oh,
so we can actually have anime watch nights.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
And once I get that figured out, we can just do that all right there.
That would be sweet if we could do it. It'd be sweet to do maybe like an episode where, yeah, we were watching it in live time and then we could do like an episode where we like break it down. I think that would be really cool. I think. Let's talk about that. I like it. We're planning stuff like on the fly as we go. It's really awesome. So but as for right now, I think we've come to the end of the cast. We've 5 minutes over the allotted time. But Tom, thank you so much for joining me as always.
As always, I'm a pleasure to be here.
Happy 2021 to you and your family.
Yes. Happy 2021.
And
remember, it's 2021. The year can drink.
True.
It's going to be better.
Just, hopefully they're not drinks made by Tom.
Maybe it's better if it is.
We'll be wiped out in no time. So happy new year, everybody. Hope you have a safe and wonderful, productive year. And we'll see you on the internet.
Laters.
Bye.